Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN1050.
Brian Hayes, Gord Miller. Sean Reed Foley's going to call in here in just a moment. Pretty quality debut last night.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's... I think, you know, don't get shelled.
Couple of Ks, don't get shelled. Get yourself out of a couple of jams. He's throwing to a guy that he's familiar with in Danny Jansen, so I'm sure that was pretty cool last night. Jansen had two hits. That was a great debut for him.
Yeah, the second one was really something. But I would
they
say
all count.
I would say this to you, that if you tuned into that game in the second inning and didn't know the story, you'd say that's a big league pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff, man.
Right, like you would not sit there and say, that guy doesn't look like he belongs there.
He's got a live arm. I always love that. the most meaningless saying ever.
No, who had the dead arm this year?
Donaldson did.
Yeah, Josh Donaldson.
So I guess you're right. There has been a reference to an actual dead arm.
Yeah, he had dead arm syndrome.
His arm was decaying at third.
It was rotting.
But it's such an empty calories comment. Nah, he's got a live arm. Well, I hope so. He's in the majors.
But the funny thing is you don't pitch with your arm.
What do you pitch with?
You pitch with your legs and your hips. That's where, like, Nolan Ryan, Roger Clemens, those guys, you pitch with your legs and your hips.
Interesting mechanics.
The arm's part of it, but the leg drive, the hips, that's where the power comes from.
Right.
Pitchers.
It's like golf, you know, like it's the whole body, the shifting of weight.
Yeah, like you don't just throw with your arm.
But it does factor in.
Well, of course it does, but I'm just saying, but the drive, the power comes from your hips and your legs.
So you think it should be... He's got a live body.
He's got a live ass.
This guy's got a live ass. That's exactly what it should be.
How about when Nolan Ryan threw at Robin Ventura, and then Ventura came out and he just kicked the crap out of him?
The anniversary of that was last week.
Like Nolan Ryan was we just said ass a second. He was a badass.
Yeah.
Nolan Ryan was like, I remember covering games that Nolan Ryan pitched in when they came to get him, and he looked at the dugout like, get back in there. You're not getting me, man.
Old school, man.
Like, get back.
Old school.
Go back in, sit down.
I'm pitching. I want to pitch. I throw Ks, and I beat people up.
Didn't Bob Gibson throw like 29 complete games one year? Some crazy...
Well, someone wrote a piece recently about old Hoss Radburn. Have you heard of this guy?
Yeah. Because
he's on Twitter.
He has the highest war ever.
Yes, because he pitched like 60 games in a season, and he averaged 9 innings an outing. So... The guy, I read about it recently, like the numbers that this guy put up in terms of, like, they got to the World Series one year. I don't even remember what team he played for, Pittsburgh or something. And he pitched in every single game. And he never came out. He pitched in every game for the whole game. Like, that is old school.
Bob Gibson had 3 complete game victories in the 67 World Series. He threw three complete games in the World Series.
Awesome. Awesome.
Now he was
those throwbacks, man. You just don't see it anymore. I like the closest to it today, like Verlander's still a guy who can throw deep. Kershaw, because he's in the National League.
Gibson,
I'd love to see him in the American League.
Back to back years, Bob Gibson, 28 complete games. So that's unbelievable.
That's great, isn't it?
So he pitched 34 games in 68, 28 complete games. He pitched 35 games the next year, 28 complete games.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, like, at the All-Star game, he wouldn't talk to other National League players.
See, I kind of missed that, where it really felt like they actually hated the opponent.
And Tim McCarver tells a story about going out to talk to him, and McCarver's and Gibson, like, what are you going to tell me? Go back down there and score.
You're McCarver. I'm Bob. Gibson.
You hit, like, 220.
Turn around and leave me alone.
But you know what? Like... Badassery is underrated.
Well, you got to back it up.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's the problem.
Hey, Mark
right?
Messier, like Mark Messier backed it up.
Messier would back it up. You knew it was coming. He'd throw an elbow. He'd stick you in the face, but then he'd also score a hat trick.
Gordie Howe? Absolutely.
There's a long list of those kind of guys, right? Where you talk a big game, you talk a lot of smack, but you back it up.
But mean. Like they look at you like...
I don't think it exists anymore. Like, who has that demeanor in pro sports anymore? It just doesn't...
Clemens did it, because Clemens would throw at you.
Yeah, but Clemens isn't around anymore. Like,
no.
I hear what you're saying, but, you know,
who's active that's a real...
Who's a real pain in the ass who's got kind of stature in the game?
Like someone who's that who would hurt you.
But you got to be a stud too, right? Like, because there are guys that will come out of the bullpen that have a loose screw.
Do you know who just retired? He's a great guy and a nice guy, but he was a badass. Jerome Iginla.
Yes.
Like Jerome. Yeah. First of all, Jerome would beat the crap out of you. Jerome also used the puck as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
If Jerome was mad at you and couldn't take a penalty, he'd shoot the puck at you.
Chris Pronger, Brendan Shanahan. Those guys were all cut from the same cloth.
Every once
in a while, they're like, I'm going to go beat the hell out of somebody.
And not just that. Like Al MacInnis, if he was, can we say on the air? Can't say that.
I'm not sure what you just tried to say, but I don't know.
No, you can't say
that. Yeah, I guess give it a pass.
If he was peeved, he would shoot the puck at you.
Oh, yeah, you can say that word. I think you can say that.
I'm not going to say it.
I just kind of go with it, and if people complain, they're going to complain.
I'm kind of a part-timer on radio.
But, yeah. You're going PG on us.
Yeah, but Jerome Iginla, late in games, if he couldn't, you know, if he couldn't take a penalty, he would actually shoot the puck at you.
Yeah. Well, O's told stories about Shanahan, where Shanahan, every once in a while, he would just be like, I got to go beat somebody up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like what's going on. I haven't scored in three games. We're down 4-1. I'm fighting.
Got to keep him honest.
And I don't know if that can happen anymore because you can't find dance partners. Like, back then, you could, if you challenged someone, it was like, okay, I'm fighting you. Now you don't have to take the challenge.
Who's the most fearsome player in baseball? Because there used to be fearsome players. Like, Don Drysdale threw it, guys.
Yeah. It was always one-sided.
Clemens threw it, guys.
Right, and that's the thing that's changed in the game. Now, we mentioned Ventura. That's dating back a fair ways. But forever, guys, you didn't charge the mound. You just had to take it.
But it was understood, too, that the outside part of the plate belonged to the pitcher. The inside part of the plate belonged to the hitter. And if you dug in, like if you crowded the plate, you were getting moved back.
Right.
That was understood.
Right.
And I don't think that happens because then you get warned.
Well, because you look at Stanton. Giancarlo Stanton, his stance.
He's on the plate.
He's on the plate. 30 years ago, he's getting hit every couple of games. Every couple of games,
right,
he's getting hit.
Right in the ear.
And especially from a horse. Like Clemens would walk in first pitch and be like, I don't care if you're standing there, I'm taking you out.
I was at the All-Star game one year. Maury Wills told a story about coming up to play. He homered against Don Drysdale. And Drysdale was trying to knock him down and missed him. So he walked him. And Wills laughed on his way to first base, took his lead off. Drysdale stepped off and he dove back. And then Drysdale took two steps and stuck him right in the ribs.
It's just so gutless, though, because there's no way of getting retribution on the pitcher. Like, that is what I think has changed in baseball.
Well, no, but Drysdale had to hit.
Well, okay. I'll grant you that, but that means the guy that you hit can't get you back. His teammate has to get that guy back. Right. What I think has changed is that most of the hitters, if not all of the hitters, have collectively come together and said, why are we putting up with this anymore? Like, what is this?
So why can't
they just hit us and we don't have to do anything?
What used to happen in hockey was, if you laid out the other team's best player, you had to fight, but then they'd go after your best player.
A lot of times that was the retribution.
So if I laid out their best player, I'd come to the bench, and you're our best player, you'd say, hey, cool it, man, because now they're coming after me.
Which I love those stories, because all the star players back in the day have told them. Like Gretzky, Yzerman, they've all, because I think that was, I believe it was the Leafs Wings series in 93 where Clark went up to him. I can't remember who was paying liberties on, I'm sure it was Gilmore. Maybe it was 94 against Bure. But that was a story that's out there, and I believe that it's a reality. I'm pretty sure it happened, where Wendell just went up to whoever their best player was on the other team and said, the next time that guy goes and touches Gilmore, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And the guy never touched Gilmore again because whoever he talked to, whether it was Yzerman or Bure, went to their guy and said, don't ever touch him again.
Stop
messing with him because he's not coming for you. He's going to kill me.
So Mark Messier laid out a guy named Blake Wesley, played for Buffalo, and like KO'd him. And the next year, early in the season, played against Boston, and Glenn Wesley was playing for the Bruins. And Wesley got a stick up or something, and Messier said, I put your brother in the hospital. I'll put you in the morgue if you ever do that again. And Glenn Wesley was terrified.
See what I
and you could do that then.
Yeah, but intimidation still factors into the game.
Oh, for sure, it's still a physical game. It's not the same. I don't know if you can terrify people anymore.
You can't. But I don't think it's because the game changed. It's because technology has changed. You're going to get caught if you act like a lunatic.
Right.
Where prior to cameras being on every single player every single moment, you could if the ref wasn't looking, you could do that. Ref wasn't looking, I will cross-check you in the face.
I don't watch enough baseball to know, but I don't get the sense when I watch baseball that players are intimidated by the possibility of getting hit.
Well, I think it depends on the moment. I think if you're in a situation where you feel like retribution is coming to your team because of what your pitcher did, I could see them walking into the box thinking, I'm going to take one right in the back or right in the shoulder or right in the arm. I hope it doesn't get me in the head.
Right.
Like, that would be intimidating. Like, not necessarily taking it off the back, but if this gets up and it gets me in the head, I could be in real trouble.
I think LeBron's intimidating. He's fierce, right? Like, he...
But not like, I'm going to hurt you intimidation.
Embarrass you.
Does that count?
I think getting embarrassed is as bad as getting hit.
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I've never been hit by a 98 mile fastball.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it depends on exactly where you get hit, right? And what kind of retribution is coming your way.
Like, back in the day, guys like Conrad Dobler in football, they went after guys' knees.
Well,
you went after guys' heads.
When a quarterback was lining up, the defensive linemen and the linebackers would be yelling, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, Sean,
if I get you, I'm going to kill you.
And don't forget, not that long ago, you know, the Saints had the bounty gate thing, right? They had the list of guys they were trying to take out. So, I mean, that is part of the game. I just don't know that people are scared anymore. I don't know that it's...
No, I don't think so. I don't think to the same extent that it used to be, by any means. In hockey, it's a totally different game. It's a different world. And again, I think technology factors into that a lot. And really where it stopped was probably either McSorley on Brashear or Bertuzzi on Moore.
I have another theory on that, and that is that what happened was the guys that fought got so big, they went into this different bucket where they only fought each other.
Yes.
Right? Like, you're not fighting Tony Twist. He was 260 pounds. You're not fighting Brian McGrattan. You're not fighting these guys because they're too big. In the 70s, every player would have one fight a year. Wayne Gretzky fought, I think, four times. Like, every player would have one fight. What happened by you know, the 2000s was 5% of the players were accounting for 80% of the fights. So it was almost like a sidecar. You had the NHL game, and then you had this sideshow where two guys who only fought each other. Like, James Myrtle made a great point about the guys who got 10 points or fewer and had over 200 minutes. That's a recent development. Like, John Ferguson was the toughest guy in the NHL. He scored 20 goals. Dave Semenko scored 20 goals in the NHL.
Yeah, you have to be able to play now.
And Dave Semenko was 215 pounds.
But we're not far removed from those guys still being in the game. Like, back in...
What do you mean?
Well, like, look at when the Leafs made the playoffs in 2012, their fourth line was Fraser McLaren, Jay McClement, and Colton Orr.
Yeah.
And when the Leafs had that much success, do you know what the Habs did in response?
Right,
they signed George Parros.
Yeah.
And I remember being in the Bell Center. It's one of the scariest moments I've ever witnessed Parros got clocked and got laid out, and he was out cold on the ice. And it was their second fight, and it was a violent fight, and they were swinging like lunatics. That's 5 years ago.
And Montreal signed Rytus Ivanens, and I was there the night that Zdeno Chara almost killed him on the ice. Like, Chara caved his face in. But
Chara is still playing and it's still going, and it's going to the Hall of Fame.
And Chara would be a guy, now he's 41 now, he's probably not, but if he grabs you, like, that's...
Terrifying.
That's
terrifying.
That's
it scary. Still would be terrifying. I'm thinking the Oilers are probably terrified because Sekera.
I was just flying back to Toronto from Edmonton. I was at the Hlinka-Gretzky Cup. I don't know if you heard.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And Peter Chiarelli was on my flight. And, you know, they're just trying to put last year behind them and everything else. And now, so Andre Sekera, ruptured Achilles.
Probably out a long term. Like, they're saying indefinite, but is that a whole year? Like, could he be out for the whole year?
Carlson got his, now, I don't know, like, so Carlson's got sliced. So you stitch that together. A ruptured Achilles, from what I understand about Achilles, there's different, like, if it pulls the bone off, you're actually okay. Because they put the bone back in with a screw and a bone heals. But if your actual Achilles shreds and they got to wrap things around it, that's the long one.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of Carlson, his was sliced. That's a little different.
And he came back relatively quickly that same season, which is really an incredible feat. But with Sekera, like, I'm not a huge fan of his, but he's a good player.
Same thing as last year. Right? He missed the start of the year last year.
Yeah.
And they, you know.
They can't afford any downturn.
It goes back to our point, Brian, earlier about Jake Gardner. You could say all you want about Andre Sekera and you don't like him and, you know, whatever. He doesn't do this, doesn't do that. He's a National Hockey League defenseman.
Yep. Plays a role. Top four guy. Bad defensive core.
Those guys are hard to replace. Like, take a guy you don't like in the NHL, try replacing him.
Yeah.
Now, there's lots of guys in the bottom end of the roster. There's guys in the American League who are probably just as good. But when you get a guy that plays 20 minutes a night in the NHL, they're hard to replace because you know what? They have experience.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Gardner. Like, we got into the Jake Gardner conversation because of the Ryan Ellis signing today, where Ellis signed an 8-year extension in Nashville worth $6.25 million. And I would take Ellis. I like Ellis a little bit more, but it's not like he's miles ahead of Gardner. Like, we had someone send in a text, and I'd have to go back and find it, saying that Ellis can skate, he can move the puck, and he can play on the power play. He's miles ahead of Gardner. I hate to break it to you. That's exactly what Gardner can do. Gardner's not overly physical. I don't think he's great defensively, and sometimes his brain can escape him, and he just finds a way to meander around the ice and get way out of position. But if you don't think Jake Gardner can skate, you're lost. If you don't think he can move the puck, you're lost. Right. And if you don't think he can man a power play, you weren't watching. Right. He had 50-plus points last year as the quarterback of the first power play, which was the second-ranked power play in the league.
Right. So
that's what he can do.
So in so many cases, people look at what someone doesn't do well.
But this is not placing value on what he actually does
do
well.
What he does do well. That's what one of the problems with teams is, they get sour on their own players because they know what they can't do. And you forget sometimes what they can do. It's hard to find guys. It really is hard to find guys who can play in the NHL and be productive every day. You can find guys that can clunk around, give you 15 minutes a night and not do anything. There's lots of those guys. Mm-hmm. But finding guys that can make plays, and by the way, guys that make plays are going to turn the puck over. Every year among the giveaway leaders, Joe Thornton.
Right. Always those guys.
He's making plays.
Carlson turns the puck over. Doughty turns the puck over because they have it so much.
And they're making passes. It's going to be...
And that's Gardner. Now, Gardner's not at that level. And Ellis getting that money, I don't think Gardner will get that money.
No one's saying he's going to get that money.
But he's going to get paid. And he's going to get term. He's got leverage.
If Leaf fans want to run him out on a rail... Now, this is my point, Brian, and I hate to come back to this, but how do they have room for Gardner next year?
Well, that's why this number, I think, is going to complicate things. I don't believe he'll get the same number as Ellis. I don't think he'll get 6.25, but I think he's getting at least 5.5.
Okay,
so that means he's dwarfing. He's getting more money than what Riley got. Riley got $5
million. What's Nylander getting?
Nylander's a different conversation because of the position he plays, and he's an RFA.
Right.
So, like, Gardner, defense is more important than wing, and UFA status gives you more leverage than RFA status. I don't believe that Nylander's getting more than $6 million a year if he wants a long-term deal. I just don't believe it's going to happen. I could be wrong, and if I am, I think I'll be off by a couple hundred thousand. I don't think he's getting like 7.5. I think if he does, the Leafs lost. I think they lost the negotiation because Pasternak didn't get it. Goudreau didn't even get it. Ehlers signed on the eve of the season last year, and he got less than six. That's the category.
But you got to do you got to do Matthews. You got to do Marner. You got to do Nylander.
Yeah.
So this year you got to do Nylander. You got to do Matthews, Marner, Kapanen, presumably Gardner next year.
Maybe Janssen, who will be an RFA as well, but he's on a 1-year deal.
Yeah. So I mean,
they got guys they got to pay for sure. But Gardner is different because he's a UFA than all these guys. Like Gardner, we haven't had this conversation at all, and I think it's because of Game 7.
I think
he was so poor in that game.
So okay, I get it.
But shouldn't it be a priority though? Like if you want to keep Gardner, shouldn't they be talking to him right now about an extension?
Maybe they don't.
But if they do, shouldn't they be talking to him? You have to. How do you not talk to him?
Well, yeah, I mean the Nylander one interests me because it's not a big deal now. It's no big deal now. I mean if you. You're not signing August 14th, but if it starts to get to August, 31st, the first week of September, and he's not signed yet, now you're starting to get into what Sir Alec Ferguson called squeaky bum time.
Really?
It's when you get nervous. It's when
Sir Alex. Haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah, squeaky bum time means things get tight.
Okay, good for him.
That's a great expression, don't you think? It's one of Ray Ferraro's favorites.
It's an old school, although he's Scottish.
Well, he's like
very Scottish.
He's he's old school Scottish. Yeah. Like he's a grim,
just a grit grinding Scotsman.
Oh, love him.
Last night was a big night for the Blue Jays in Kansas City. They lost the game, but the debut of a potential battery moving forward.
Yeah,
Danny Jansen behind the plate coming up, making his debut last night, and the starting pitcher for the Jays last night, Sean Reed Foley, making his major league debut, and now he's making his Overdrive debut. How about that for a segue? What's happening, Sean?
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing all right, man. Has it dawned on you that you're a major leaguer yet, or what?
still going through it a little bit, trying to, but no, up here and trying to help out this team with everything I can.
Sean, was there a moment like first inning, second inning, where you felt like you kind of got in a groove, like okay, I'm here, I can do this?
No, it was so nerve-wracking.
All right, we got to try to get him on a landline. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll see if we can get him on.
Yeah,
he's in the clubhouse, I think. See if we can get him on a landline. We'll come back. We'll get to Sean Reed Foley. All right.
You okay?
No, I'm not. That's twice now, and it drives me nuts. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, hopefully Sean Reed Foley is going to call in, and the cell reception will hold up. We'll see. See what happens. We've got to get to Gord Miller's esteemed reporting from the Wayne Gretzky-Hlinka tournament. Or is it Hlinka Gretzky? I've already screwed it up. Cup. The Hlinka Gretzky Cup.
Yes.
You're reporting on four potential options for the 2022 Winter Olympics.
So I did a panel
Olympics.
Discussion with Rene Fazel, and he talked about, he laid out for the IOC, there's four options for the next Olympics. And one of them is no hockey. And he said, we mean it.
Like believe that for a
if
second.
If you're not going to play ball with us. Well, his argument is that the Olympics need hockey more than hockey needs the Olympics. And don't forget...
You think that's true?
What people don't understand about the Olympics is the IOC deals with the federations, but the sports aren't run by the IOC. They're run by the sport federations. So track and field at the Olympics is run by the International Amateur Athletics Federation. Hockey's run by the IHF. Basketball's run by FIBA. They decide the eligibility requirements. They do all of that.
Right.
So if the IHF said no hockey's going to be played at the Olympics... They could do
that. Why would they use that tactic? To try to get them to bend on getting NHL players back and make it easy for them?
Well, because the IOC is refusing to pay for insurance, travel, all the things that go with it. And the problem is, in the Winter Olympics, so in Vancouver in 2010, okay, the 33 men's hockey games accounted for 60% of the revenue at the Olympics.
Oh, I know so people say speed skating and figure skating.
It dwarfs it.
It's hockey.
Hockey
that defines it.
Yeah.
For sure. We'll pick up on that reporting and the three other options.
Yeah.
But we got Sean Reed Foley back on.
Okay, good.
What's up, Sean?
Hey, how you guys doing?
That's better. Sorry about that, man. It was cell reception. It can get shoddy. Thanks for finding a landline down in Kansas City. We were talking about last night and just how cool that moment was. And at any point, did you get a chance to kind of stand on the mound and look around and allow yourself to really embrace the moment that you had made it to the major leagues?
A little bit, but I mean, it was so much going on and so nervous that I was really just trying to focus on what I had to do and didn't really get to embrace it as much as I would have liked to.
How special was it to be there with Danny Jansen, for the two of you who know each other to do this together?
It was pretty awesome. Looking back there before the first pitch, right before he put his mask on, smiled at me, and that helped a little bit. And then just out in the bullpen with him, we were talking, and it was just nice to know that we're both going through it, and it was good to get the first one out of the way.
There was some buzz online and even just the broadcast kind of covering the game last night that when you found yourself in a bit of a jam, there was a debate of whether or not Gibbons would go to the bullpen, but he allowed you to kind of pitch your way out of it early on. You end up throwing 97 pitches over five innings. How much did you appreciate that opportunity from Gibbons to allow yourself to get out of a couple of jams early on?
It was pretty awesome and just tough to walk someone with the bases loaded and put myself in either deeper hole than I was already in. It definitely showed that he was in my corner and everybody in the dugout was. And it felt good, definitely, to not worry about all that going on.
How would you rate your performance? What would you say about, you know how well you can pitch. How would you rate last night?
I'd say probably like a 5 out of 10. I mean, gave up too many mistakes, put a lot of guys on, which it's a very good hitting team over there, and they took advantage of my mistakes and definitely put me up against the wall, and I really had to fight my way out of it. There's definitely work that could be done and can get better every day, and it all starts today, and we look forward to the next one.
With Sean Reed Foley, who made his debut last night for the Jays in Kansas City. We had Doug Flutie on earlier, and we're talking about, you know, details of his career. Like I said, you threw 97 pitches last night. Can you remember all 97? Like, could you go back and remember exactly the situation, what you threw, why you threw it, how you threw it? Are you one of those guys that just constantly details what happened the night before?
No, I mean, it's more of just I remember the results, whether it was giving up a hit or getting a guy out, that type of stuff. There's no way I can remember every pitch.
How would you define the difference between facing a major league hitter and a minor league hitter?
I'd say that they're more selective and they know their zone pretty well, and that's why you have to be on the attack and you have to make it so that they have to swing, so you got to get ahead. And but I mean, the minors are kind of the same, you know, you got to be on the attack so everyone, or they start swinging. But I would just say that they're more seasoned hitters up here. They know what they're doing. And they're looking, sometimes they're looking for one pitch, and if you throw it, doesn't matter how well executed it is, it's going to get hit.
Right. With Sean Reed Foley. So what have the Jays told you about the plan for the rest of the year? Are you expecting to get multiple starts? What is the expectation for you with the big club going forward?
I have no clue. I'm just happy to be here, and I have a jersey on my back, and whatever they want me to do, I'm all for it, you know, because if I can help this team win in any way, then I would love to be a part of it.
So, Sean, you know, I think, you know, it's been a tough year for the Blue Jays, but people are looking at yourself, Jansen, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, and thinking this is going to be the core of the Blue Jays, you know, down the road. Do you guys look at it that way? Do you guys think of yourselves and say, hey, like, as a group, that we're going to be sort of what the Blue Jays will look like in 3 to 4 years?
You just got to go every day and try to get better. I mean, you can't really look for the future, because once you start looking past what's going on right now, you get caught up in everything. And I don't think we've ever said it to each other. And I would say last night or yesterday, whenever I was around Thomas Pannone, Brian Borucki, and Jansen, we all kind of like looked at each other and we're like, wow, we're all in the big leagues. Like, it's crazy. We would never really talk about it down there, because we always wanted to get here, and that's why we just kept working for it.
Well, you made it last night, and we look forward to seeing what else you have in store, not only the rest of this year, but throughout your career. Congrats on getting there and on the outing last night, and thank you for doing this today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the time, and anytime.
You got it, man. There's Sean Reed Foley, major league starter.
Yeah.
Gave that's himself a 5 out of 10 last night.
That's got to be a nerve-wracking thing, right? So if you're making your major league debut in Kansas City and you're a right fielder, right, like, you probably won't bat in the first inning. You know, you're probably down the lineup.
Yeah, well, Jansen hit ninth last
night. Right, so you're hitting ninth. Now, in Jansen's case, you got to catch the game. But if you're the right fielder, you might not do anything for 3 innings. You might just, you know, you're kind of out there. And
which, like, is great, because you get to run out, warm up. That's awesome.
But you're the pitcher, man. You got to, like...
Yeah, it's a totally different experience. Like, you've got to bring it immediately.
Yeah.
And he put himself in jams last night. And he got himself out of it. And I credit Gibbons. And I think that is important to point out. They're not playing for wins and losses with these kids.
Nope.
Now, you don't want to burn
them. But I think you got to be careful, too. Like, he doesn't give up a grand slam. Or, you know,
you
like,
want to put him in a position to fail. Like, it is a tedious, you know, position and experience, or an experiment for a manager to know when to pull the plug and when to give them more rope. I think Gibbons handled it pretty well last night. But with these kids coming up, and there are going to be more coming up.
And there's going to be bumps. There's going to be, you know, no one walks in and just dominates in pro sports anymore. It's very, well, a few do, but it's very hard to do. It's just, it's men playing the sport for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, the veterans you're playing against know their way around the league. They've seen you before. They've seen young pitchers before. They know what they do.
right? They know what your best pitch is, and they know you're probably going to throw it in a jam.
Yep.
Because you don't, right?
You got to rely on your best stuff.
Right.
But you've got to be deceptive, too. That's how you make it in the majors.
But that comes with experience. That's what young hockey players do. They go 100 miles an hour in the NHL when they get there, and then they realize you got to change speeds. You got to, right?
Yep, for sure.
Connor McDavid doesn't go 100 miles an hour all the time.
No, deception's a big part of his success.
And so it's hard. Like I think the biggest thing you learn being around athletes over the years, it's really hard to get to the major leagues, the big leagues, the NHL, whatever, the Apple, whatever you want to call it. It's even harder to stay there.
There's lots
of guys that get there and can't stay.
Well, the average turnover is a low number. Like when you think about it, it's a very low number. The average amount of, like I think in the NHL, it's like really low. Like the average amount of games is like 9 games or something.
Yeah, so if you count guys who just play one game.
But that they made it, right? They got there, they got on the record books,
absolutely.
They played.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what I'm saying. Like we focus on who got to 1,000 games, but there's a limited amount of guys that have done that.
Oh.
The league's been around for 100 years.
No, totally. And I think that's the hard thing is that, you know, like I do the World Junior every year and I see these kids and, you know, so I do the games at the World Junior. And you see these kids, and then you realize that as great as they are at that level, 6 or 7 of them per year aren't going to play in the NHL.
Right.
So last year, 890 skaters played in the NHL.
That seems almost low.
So, and then 95 goaltenders. So nearly 1,000 players played in the NHL last year. So on a team where you have 18 skaters in a game, in a 31-team league, right? Like, a lot of guys played a few games.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of guys played just a few games.
Yep. There's a lot of footnotes, man.
Right. And that's...
And in baseball, it's a bigger roster that they use.
Yeah.
In football, it's that much more. I mean, it's a 53-man roster.
And the other thing is,
in
football, you're so replaceable, right?
Very much so. Non-guaranteed contracts and injuries.
There's 110 Division I schools. You basically have the run of who you want.
Yep.
Right, so there's no other league the CFL a little bit, but there's no other league in the world competing with you.
No, there isn't. Not at that level. No. Another thing we pointed out earlier that it really became clear last night and was somewhat of a depressing moment once you embraced it was we're 3 years removed from that ALCS between the Royals and the Blue Jays.
And
how
quickly you get that close now, quickly just...
It just teeters away for both teams. Like, the Royals are terrible as well.
Yeah.
Now, they got their World Series. They went to back-to-back World Series, and they actually won one. So they were a step above what the Jays accomplished. But that was a great rivalry. Whenever those two teams met, it was nasty.
You couldn't wait.
I remember there was a series when Kansas City was in Toronto. I think it was in 16. Remember that?
Yeah.
And there were brawls, and it was nasty.
It was a full carryover from the series the year before.
It was awesome. And now it just has completely petered out because the rosters have turned over and the expectations have fallen off. They're not very good teams.
Yeah.
They're awful teams, quite frankly, with eyes towards the future. And it's like it feels like it was 20 years ago when these two teams were playing meaningful games, and you couldn't wait to see it happen. Same thing with Baltimore. The Orioles are on pace for like 110 losses.
It's,
and they were right there with the Jays and the Royals. And
it's weird. But, you know, you get close, and then it slips. Like, you know, talk to people in Edmonton about it. You know, we just talked about the Oilers. I mean, you're in the second round against Anaheim. You think you might have them. You get a bad call.
They should have won that series, too.
You probably should have won the series. Next year, missed the playoffs by a mile.
And now look at it adding up again. We mentioned Andre Sequeira. Is it Sequeira or Sequeira?
Sequeira.
Sequeira has got an Achilles injury, and he's going to be out for an extended period of time.
Out. Now you're capped out.
Yeah. So you still got to sign Darnell Nurse.
You got to sign Darnell Nurse. Like, so it's hard to explain in baseball because in sports like the NFL, the NHL especially, which has the hardest cap in sports, right? The most firm salary.
No flexibility.
So you can see how it happens to Chicago, L.A., teams like that. You get capped out. You just can't. You can't keep all your good players. And in baseball, you wouldn't think it would happen as often. But eventually, you got to pay guys.
So you win, and there's a budget that's in place.
You win the World Series, you got to pay guys.
Yeah. And owners, you know, it's not a hard salary cap, but they are going to place a budget. It's their money. So whatever they tell you can spend, that's your cap, and it's a hard cap. You can try to sell them on whatever you want, but if they're not flexible, they're not flexible.
Right.
We were talking about what came out of the Hlinka-Gretzky?
Yeah, yeah.
About the 2022 Olympics.
So basically what
Rene Four options, right?
Rene Fizzell, option number one is NHL players.
I still think that's the best option.
Option number two is the pool of players they used last time. So no one,
which would be awful.
No one under NHL contract. Option three would be an under 23 tournament like FIFA has. So basically,
I don't see it working.
So you would have players under the age of 23, NHL players presumably, playing in it.
How would you work that out?
Well, that's the thing.
Why would the NHL let those guys go?
Option four, no hockey. So I think that's the nuclear option. But what Fizzell is saying is we are such a big part of the Winter Olympics. We are such a major driver of the sport. You have to make concessions. On the IOC side, they're concerned because when they were paying for the players' travel costs and the insurance and everything else, they got tennis players to think about. They got golfers now to think about. They got, you know, soccer players, track and field athletes. Like if Usain Bolt could charge appearance money, like just think about it for a second. So Usain Bolt runs in three events at the Olympics, okay? So he basically competes 7 days at the Olympics. You could argue they put 90,000 people in that stadium to see him. Like he's a big part, he was a big part of the attraction,
yeah.
Right? No appearance money. He gets none of that. So if you're starting to make concessions for the NHL players, Why can't Usain Bolt say, if you want me at the Olympics, send me a private jet?
Right, but I think the difference would be Bolt needs the Olympics. He's not Usain Bolt without it.
So to your point, so Fizzell's argument is that the Olympics need hockey more than hockey needs the Olympics. Men's hockey.
Yeah, I think
women's hockey will be there anyway.
Yeah, I think you can make the argument. I don't dispute that. I mean, the Winter Games is nowhere close to as lucrative as the Summer Games because there just aren't as many competitors and there aren't as many events. And not nearly as many events that are front line like hockey is. Well, I think NHL is going because of China. I think because it's in China, they want to be there. It's an important market. The under 23 isn't going to work.
I will tell you this, Brian.
Players go.
There's a lot of owners still opposed. There are a lot of owners still opposed.
Which they might be.
Gary Bettman, this is the misunderstanding about it. Gary Bettman didn't jam this down the owner's throat that they weren't going to Pyeongchang. They don't want to go. Like I would say, if I had to guess, the last I heard, the vote was like 24 no.
Because what did they have to get them to go? Is it a majority?
Would
16, if 16 owners say yes, do they go in 2022?
No, it's not a vote. I mean, Bettman does the negotiation. If you had 24 owners that wanted to go, Bettman would probably. But here's the problem. So you own the Winnipeg Jets. Congratulations, you own the Jets. What do you get out of the Olympics?
Short term, nothing.
Right.
Long term, hopefully the game expands and grows.
Except the World Cup, what'd you get?
You got half the pot.
Right. Which, now, the pot wasn't very big. It was a bit of a dud, but it was first time. I mean, not first time, but first time back. Each team got, I think, $700,000.
Well, and it was before the season. They didn't have to shut down their product.
Yeah. So 700 grand.
It's in their time zone.
700 grand is better than nothing. And you think if the thing starts to grow, maybe next time you get $1.5 million.
Yeah. Listen, I'm all for the World Cup as long as you commit to it.
Right. So they would say, we control the World Cup. We get all the marketing. We get all the revenue. All of this stuff. We get nothing at the Olympics. We can't even get... San Jose's doctor couldn't even get down to see Joe Thornton in Vancouver when he hurt his wrist. So their argument is, we get nothing out of this. Now, fans want it. Players want it. I get that. But at the same time, how would you feel... Okay, and this is, you know, but just think, Austin Matthews goes to the Beijing Olympics and breaks his leg. How do you feel?
Yeah, it would be awful.
Now, he could break his leg playing in an NHL game, but he didn't.
Yep.
John Tavares didn't get hurt playing for the Islanders.
Mm-hmm. He got his leg over there.
Well, he hurt his knee.
Or whatever it was.
He got hurt at the Olympics. Playing for someone that, you know, like the Islanders had got nothing out of it.
Yeah, listen, I understand that counter. I mean, quite frankly, with them... When it was in Korea, with the games on at 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning or whatever, I didn't need that because I wasn't going to get up at 4 in the morning.
I was doing those games.
I know, but it was your time zone.
I was doing those games. You weren't watching them?
Yeah, they were awful.
But I was doing the games, Brian. Like
I appreciate that.
If you were doing the games, I would have supported you. I would have supported you.
But you're doing it for CBC, I believe.
NBC.
Was it NBC? I didn't even get that feed, I don't think. So it didn't matter to me.
You don't have NBC?
Well, right? I don't have NBC Sportsnet. I'm sure it was on NBCSN, I would think.
On both.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I wasn't watching.
That's fine. I'm not hurt.
I got to be honest. I don't remember watching any of the hockey tournament because I just didn't care.
Right. So okay, fair.
I didn't care at all.
I'm kidding about not watching.
Yeah.
Any, but
no, I hear you. But and if the NHL players were there, it would be a gravitational right. pull. I would probably sure. want to see it. But at 4 a.m, I don't know if I'm doing that.
Right. So that's going to be the same thing in Beijing.
I hear you, and that's why I understand why owners are like, "What's the point?" Now, when it comes back to North America. Very How different story.
So what? We're only going to play in the Olympics when it's in North America?
Well, they've obviously decided the last time, like, they just pulled out. And they haven't said no to 2022. So they're
now,
clearly doing this one at a time.
There's going
to
be a labor deal between now and then.
And that's on the players. If they really want to fight for it, they can fight for it, but they're going to have to give something else up.
Well, they're going to get locked out first.
Probably.
Won't that be fun?
That'll be outstanding. I can't wait. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Tee up the Jays game as well tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. Best bets brought to you by ProLine. I think I hit a winner. I just assume I hit a winner.
You always assume that? Okay.
Yeah.
Just checking. I
don't
think
you did. You got a problem
with that? I don't think you did.
I probably didn't, but just feed lies. Eventually it'll be true. That's who told me that?
Donald Trump?
It was probably Trump. Yeah. I can take the under in the Boston Philly game tonight. I'm fading the Baltimore Orioles, even though I'm playing the Mets, which is tough.
You fade the Orioles nonstop, right?
They're going to lose like 115 times.
You're not. No.
You have to.
Yeah.
And Atlanta at home over Miami. Throw down 20, you can score 80. You can find my picks on Twitter, at TSN 1050 Radio, and get way into the game with ProLine. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. All right, giveaway time. Phone lines are open, 416-870-1050. The Chevrolet Silverado 250 is back August 24th through the 26th at the Canadian Tire Motorsport Park. Listen to Overdrive all week long for your chance to win a four-pack of weekend super tickets, including parking and paddock access valued at over $250 a pop. Get all the details at tsn1050.ca. The first caller in at 416-870-1050. 416-870-1050. We had Sean Reed Foley on about 20 minutes ago. He rated his debut out of 10 last night. What number did he give himself out of 10 last night? 1 through 10. First one in with that answer at 416-870-1050 picks up a four-pack of tickets to the Chevrolet Silverado 250.
What would you give yourself on the show today?
6.5.
6.5? Feeling pretty solid?
Yeah, less saucy today. Yeah. I think I've been pretty cordial.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
All right.
You've been pretty saucy today.
I'm giving myself a 7.
You're going with a 7? Okay.
Just because it's more than you.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know, I'm just going to give myself a 7.
Go for it, man. I thought you brought it today.
Yeah, you can't mark yourself. I'm off the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm. So. Any big plans or what?
I'm going to Bobby Orr's golf tournament on Friday. I'm emceeing Bobby Orr's golf tournament.
Up in Parry Sound?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's always fun, yeah.
Awesome. Say hi to Bobby.
Will, he's a good man. So what time are we off here?
Yeah, you got a couple seconds.
So a guy comes up last year, and we're all sitting around the back patio, and the guy says, "Hey, do you guys know where the Bobby Orr Memorial Arena is?" And Bobby's like, "He's not dead yet." And the guy says, "No? Has he ever come back here?" Bobby's, "Yeah, once in a while." The guy says, "What's he like?" Good guy.
Had no idea.
Guy's talking to Bobby Orr. No idea.
Good man.
Yeah.
That's great.
Can you imagine we got to the Hall of Fame, and then, oh my God, I was talking to Bobby Orr.
I love those stories.
Yeah.
Well, say hi to Bobby.
I will.
All right, man. We'll see you here when? Next week, maybe? Or
next Monday and Tuesday.
See you next Monday. I'm out of here. I will be back tomorrow. He's Gord Miller. I'm Brian Hayes. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.